local talk about local issues. It's the Gary Bouton Show on the AJR News Network.
And a good Monday morning to all. Spike Nesmith is with us this morning. Mike King on phones. Brittany Murray handling news duties. National Lager Day, Spike, although I might suggest that on this 20-degree morning, lovely outside, but 20 degrees, hot coffee, hot tea might be the way to start your day as opposed to a little belt of lager. Also, the birthday of Melville Dewey. Any ideas? Melville Dewey? Dewey Decimal System he created back in the 1800s. He was 21 years old. It's still used today in like 135 countries around the world. Of course, everything's digitized now, but they still use the Dewey Decimal System. 21 years old is all he was. Okay, down to business on our show this morning. We're going to talk about a new partnership. It's kind of a partnership between WVU and Marshall to provide consumer assistance, consumer education in legal matters for those that might not be able to afford an attorney or a perhaps it's a case that wouldn't necessarily warrant the hiring of attorney, but there will be some help out there. We're going to talk to the WVU director, Jonathan Marshall, in a moment. Michael Spadafore will be here. We're going to get an update on the new Clarksburg History Museum. Michael and some others were spearheading this project. I think they got started over the summer. They've had a few exhibits there, and we'll get an update on what they're doing here as we near the end of 2018. And then Joe Stevens, who joins us usually once or twice a year, you've probably heard or seen him around the state already. He's the executive director of the West Virginia Ski Areas Association, and he'll give us an update on what's going on with our ski resorts, if they're all open. I think they should all be open by now. It's been plenty cold to keep snow on the ground. So Joe will check in later in the program. First up this morning, we welcome Jonathan Marshall, co-director of the Center for Consumer Law and Education at WVU. Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good to be inside, and I hope you are as well. It's
absolutely
just a little chilly out there this morning. This is a partnership of sorts with Marshall. You're going to be directing the WVU end of this, so to speak, and it's essentially, I'm going to let you explain, but it's legal assistance for consumers in matters that perhaps a high-priced attorney is not the way to go.
So this is actually very much a partnership between the West Virginia University College of Law and Marshall University. And essentially, the mission of the center is going to be to serve as a principal consumer law, policy, education, and support resource in West Virginia, and in fact, nationally. And to your point about providing assistance to consumers, we will be providing assistance to consumers, not necessarily in the form of litigation, but rather in the form of information, resources, helping to coordinate all the various organizations and partners that are out there that do serve consumers in litigation and other forms as well as that. And so very much what the center is designed to do is to serve as a center for the coordination of effort and resources in order to provide consumers, to provide policymakers, to provide, well, even students, opportunities that they wouldn't otherwise be able to have.
Yeah. And there are, I know it's broader than the example I'm giving, but there are folks out there that might have a legal issue that is not big enough to engage an attorney. Even if you had some kind of a recovery, it might be too costly to go down that road. So this might provide some help that you could essentially study on your own and go to magistrate court or wherever.
Absolutely. Okay. And, you know, we have several different resources, of course, at the West Virginia University College of Law. Specifically, you know, we have an extensive clinical program, a general clinic, as well as specialized clinics. So there's support there. There is legal aid. There are other organizations out there. What we're finding is that there's just so much information sometimes out there that a consumer doesn't even know where to begin. And so what I envision the center will be doing is helping to essentially organize and make sure that there's almost a one-stop shop for a consumer who has a question or has a problem, and hopefully we can provide them the information they need in order to solve the problem themselves, or if they need additional help, we can direct them to the place that they need to go.
We're talking with Jonathan Marshall, who's the co-director of the Center for Consumer Law and Education at WVU. The other half of this program is going to be based out of Marshall. And your roles are a little bit different, are they not?
They are and they aren't.
Okay.
This is one center. It is a partnership. And the co-director, Dr. Damian Arthur from Marshall, and I very much share the same vision, and that is one of a single center. And what we can do, though, is we can work in various areas. You know, I obviously am a trained lawyer. He is, knows public policy. Marshall does certain things that the College of Law doesn't do.
Marshall doesn't have a law school, right?
It doesn't have a law
school. Okay, right, okay.
And so what we can do, though, is take a really multidisciplinary approach to problems and issues. We very much want to be of not only service to consumers, but service to policymakers. And so much what you see with respect to consumer law and policy is it touches all sorts of areas of life. And just approaching it with one perspective, i.e. that of the law, or a perspective maybe only in public policy, really kind of misses the point. And so we find that the competitive advantage, the real thing that makes this truly unique, this center unique nationally, is the fact that of this partnership, the fact that we can take a multidisciplinary approach to the problems.
Is this service, I'm going to call it a service, something that would have more likely been found in the nonprofit sector as opposed to a partnership between a couple of universities?
The simple fact of the matter is there's really only a handful of these centers in the entire country.
Okay.
I'm not aware of a single center like this that exists in this form, a partnership between two institutions.
Jonathan, can you give an example of, I know this is going to serve, the center will serve a lot of different folks, but give an example of where the average guy on the street, Gary Bowden, what's an example of a case where I might utilize the resources available through the Consumer Law Center?
Fair question. Let me try to answer it this way.
Okay.
One of the very first things that we're focusing on is identifying places where folks can get help. And there are lots of different entities that can help people with various different problems. You know, legal aid, if you have a problem with your landlord. The clinics, depending upon what type of problem you have. And so one of the very first things we're going to be doing is providing a resource that will allow consumers, if they've got a problem, to go identify where they can get the help that best suits the problem that they have.
Okay.
But as to kind of specific subject matter or specific problems, one of the things we're also working on, for instance, is a support service for students with respect to their student loan debt. There is a lot of complexity with respect to student loan debt. You have private student loan debt. You have public student loan debt. You have forgiveness programs. And you have to do certain things in order to qualify for certain types of programs. It can get very complicated. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we want to do is provide to students some information, some simple information that at least gives them a frame of reference as to all these various issues that relate to student loan debt. So that's an example.
Is one of the items at the top of your to-do list or one of the initial components of this Center for Consumer Law and Education going to be a website that's a kind of a repository for all of this various information and help?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There, and that is one of the central ways that I believe we can serve as a center. Again, there are a lot of resources out there. There's a lot of information out there. And very much what we want to try to do is organize the information, categorize the information, push the information out to those who most need it.
I want to give a little pat on the back to local attorney, because this concept, the idea to start up this Center for Consumer Law, was spearheaded by local attorney David Romano here in Clarksburg, wasn't it?
It was, in fact.
Yeah, okay.
This was David's vision.
Yeah.
It was his vision years ago. And this thing would not exist but for that vision.
Yeah, I think actually funded by some unclaimed dollars that resulted from a large class action suit that in which his clients prevailed.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. American Power or something like that. I guess that part's not important. So once the website's up, Jonathan, what are some of the different categories that I can search then if I'm doing this on my own as just a average Joe with very little legal knowledge?
Sure. So we'll have various aspects to the website, because again, the center's mission is to serve the public, of course, but it's also to serve policymakers. It's to serve our partner organizations with coordination support, and we also, of course, want to serve students by giving them some opportunities to learn through experience and participate in the center's activities. But if you were a person or a consumer who just had a question, what you'll be able to do is you'll be able to look on that website, and depending upon what your problem is or what your issue is, again, whether it be I have a problem, I need a lawyer, what do I do? I've got this problem. I don't think I need a lawyer. I just want some more information. We'll be able to provide right. some links to sites, to other resources that'll hopefully either answer your problem or tell you where you need to go next.
Will WVU Law School students play a role in the development of this center?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
One of the things that we hope to do by next semester is make some research assistant opportunities available. We will have scholarship opportunities. Those scholarship opportunities will be both for students and as well as faculty at the West Virginia University College of Law. So this is very much going to be a full-on effort by the institution as well as students.
And presumably it can become a research for legislative rulemaking as well as aid to the public and students and others.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's one of the powers, the powerful aspects of the center. The fact that you can draw on the expertise of two separate institutions in West Virginia, the preeminent institutions in West Virginia. And that's a powerful combination. And we hope that, that policymakers will call upon the center to address issues.
Mm-hmm. How long, we're just about out of time. How long will it take for the center and some of the projects that will be a part of it before it's operational? And how will it be marketed to the public?
So,
or am I getting ahead of you, Jonathan?
Is that the music? You're cueing me?
No. That's our music, yeah. But go ahead. We have time to answer, yes.
Sure. This is the vision is we're already up and running.
Okay.
In the sense that we're already reaching out to our partner organizations. We're already asking folks, how can we help you? And we're getting information back from partner organizations. We're getting information back from policymakers, as well as, we're really pushing to get this website up and running.
Yeah.
The first of next year, we're going to have fellowships available to faculty members. We're going to have our scholarships available to our students by the beginning of next year. So as far as I'm concerned, we're up and running.
Okay, that's exciting. Jonathan Marshall is the co-director of the Center for Consumer Law and Education, brand new at WVU, and also there's a partnership or part of the co-op here of sorts is with Marshall University, and they'll be developing their own plan, right?
We'll be actually working together.
Okay. But it'll be a little bit different than what your focus is.
That's right.
Okay. I realize it's working together, but you'll also have some slightly different items on your list. So, okay, Jonathan, thanks for joining us and helping us understand a little bit. I think it's going to be a good service for our folks.
Excited about it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, Jonathan Marshall, thanks for joining us. We've got to take a break. When we return, we're going to be joined, I hope, by Michael Spatafor, who's going to talk about the Clarksburg History Museum. We'll get a little update right after this.
And now, back to the Gary Boughton Show on the AJR News Network.
And we're joined by Michael Spatafor in studio. You are chairman of the Clarksburg History Museum Committee? Commission?
What? That's it. It's a mouthful.
Yeah, well, it's...
Clarksburg History Museum Committee.
Well, I mean, you've done a lot of work on it. You started over the summer, didn't you?
On the committee?
Well, the actual... After you got a space and started the physical work on developing the museum over the summer.
Yes.
You've worked on it longer than that.
That's correct. That's correct, yes.
All right. I know you've put in a lot more time than that. So you are, I want to remind people, you're located on the second floor of the Board of Education building.
The new Board of Education building on West Main Street.
On West Main Street, yes. In downtown Clarksburg.
That's the old Dominion building.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you have what there now? Because I know you started with pretty much... Four walls and not even a you had a floor, but you had to replace the floor.
We had some old carpeting in there that we took up, and we've done some fundraising, and now we have a nice new wooden floor that we've installed, fresh paint on the walls, and we have a separate room that's set up for our gift shop.
Oh, okay.
So it's all ready to go, and it will be open when we have our sneak peek on Saturday.
Which we're going to talk about. What other... things physically do you need to do to the area as far as repairs or refurbishing?
We have some cases, display cases, in the museum right now. So we're fixing those up, painting them. They need some repairs. A local shop downtown, the man is retiring, so we're going to buy some of his display cases at K&K Loans. And we'll be getting those at the end of the year.
Do you have items on? I know you've had some items on temporary display. Do you have any items yet that are on what we would call permanent display?
Yes. Okay. For Veterans Day, we had the military exhibit.
Right.
So we had over 100 visitors there, and that was kind of like a sneak peek also.
Yeah.
And we do have some things that we're putting in this week. So Ryan Tolley from the Robinson Grand was there, and he set up an exhibit for the Robinson Grand Theater, and that will be a permanent exhibit. And we are having...
That's some of their memorabilia, some of the artifacts that were taken out before they did the total remodeling?
The old ticket booth was there, and the old cash register he brought in, and so those will be on display permanently at the Clarksburg History Museum.
And for those that haven't been to the center yet, we might add that there's quite a few items that they actually have on full-time display in the Performing Arts Center.
There are.
They made it kind of a part
of
the remodeling. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the fire department has made some donations of artifacts and some old pictures of fires around the city. So those will be on display at our open house, and the police department also has made some contributions. And we have people setting up all week this week, getting ready for the open house.
All right. And is it hard doing the refurbishing and trying to set up displays at the same time? Are you kind of working around yourself?
It is, It gets a little confusing at times. We have some really good volunteers and always in need of more, of course. But we've been working, a lot of us work during the day, so we're working, in the evenings and on the weekends.
So you're going to have what you're calling a sneak peek open house this Saturday. What's it about?
Sneak peek open house will be this Saturday, December 15th, from 4 to 8 p.m. We'll have some refreshments, and we'll have some entertainment, and we'll have some door prizes. Our gift shop will be open, and this will give everyone an opportunity to see the artifacts that we do have already currently in the museum, and people are setting up exhibits all this week. So we'll probably have about 10 or 12 small exhibits, and we call it a sneak peek because we're hoping, next year, 2019, to add to those exhibits that we already have, and then to add more exhibits. I've been in contact with the Clarksburg newspaper, West Virginia Media Corporation, and they have newspapers that go all the way back to 1860.
Mm.
So they're planning on doing an exhibit in 2019. So we have, like I said, about 10 or 12 small exhibits that will be there for the sneak peek, just to give people an idea of what's to come in the future.
Who's helping you with all of this, both remodeling and then the setup of the displays as more and more memorabilia comes in?
So those are volunteers with the committee.
Okay.
And we've gotten money from city council and from the Harrison County Commission. Steptoe & Johnson has donated some money. Clarksburg Uptown has given us some money. And just a group of volunteers. You want me to name some volunteers?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, we're going to take a break and we'll come back. And,
okay, we have Connie and Worthy Poe.
Okay, right.
And Connie is very instrumental in the setting up the gift shop, so it's ready to go. And working on the exhibits, we have Marcia Villanca, who is the Clarksburg Flower Shop, and she's been very active in helping us. And we have Pete Secret, we have Andy Labdick, and we have many people that have brought in artifacts just from the community.
We're going to take a break. I want to ask you about that because I wonder how you, and I think curate is the right word, when everybody's saying, here, put this in your museum, somebody's got to decide whether it's worthy or not to be in the museum. So we'll talk about that. We're talking with Michael Spadafore, who's head of the committee developing the Clarksburg History Museum. We've got to take a news break. We'll be back more with Michael Spadafore right after this.
Your daily dose of sanity. The Gary Bowden Show on the AJR News Network.
We're talking with Michael Spadafore, who's the chairman of the Clarksburg History Museum Committee, doing a lot of remodeling, working through exhibit materials, some of which came from the Harrison County Historical Society, right? Stuff that they've had but can't display?
Yes. We're working closely with the Harrison County, West Virginia Historical Society. Crystal Weimer is their director, and she has lots of artifacts. And when we were talking a couple years ago, that's really when we came up with the idea of the Clarksburg History Museum. She said she has, she said, I have lots of artifacts in the Staley Goff Vance House, which is on West Main Street. And she said, I'd like to get those out and get them displayed. So she's helping us this morning, actually, setting up an exhibit for representing the Staley Goff Vance House and maybe some of the Jackson family and John W. Davis.
Crystal's been on the show several times. She's a wealth of material for you. She's a wealth of information
for us. She's our museum expert.
Yeah. She does a good job. So I want to remind folks again, the sneak peek of the museum is this coming Saturday?
This Saturday, 4 to 8 p.m.
Okay.
On the second floor of the Board of Education building.
And you'll have some snacks, drinks.
We will have refreshments. We will have entertainment.
Oh, okay.
We're going to have some raffles.
Door prizes.
Door prizes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, and our gift shop will be open.
Let's talk about the gift shop.
Okay.
What's going to be in the gift shop or what's already in the gift shop?
Well, right now we're going to focus on, Clarksburg and West Virginia items.
Okay.
Right now we have a lot of Christmas supplies in there, so people can do their Christmas shopping while they're there at our sneak peek.
Yeah. And I presume you can use this opportunity for folks that aren't that familiar yet to see what you've got, where you're going, and perhaps even think about donating to the future of the museum.
Exactly. We just happen to have some cards there at the front table. You can become a friend of the museum. So that could be volunteering time. It could be making a donation. It could be donating some artifacts to the museum. And artifacts don't have to be given to the museum or the historical society. They can be loaned.
Okay.
And in case people want them back, because sometimes they don't want to give up, artifacts that they have from their great great grandparents or whatever. So, they can loan those to the museum and we would be very appreciative of that. And you just never know what you're going to get. I'm walking down the street. Sometimes someone will walk up to me and hand me a 1929 yearbook from Victory High School.
And
you just never know what you're
going to
get.
That was my next question. We mentioned it going into the break, that as more and more people learn of the museum, I'm sure you are going to be stopped more often. And how do you, what committee is being formed to curate all these items that are being offered or will be offered?
Well, in the Clarksburg History Museum Committee, we do have subcommittees under that.
Okay.
So we have some financial people, we have the exhibit people, so they kind of go through all the artifacts and decide if they're worthy or not. Right now, we're pretty much taking everything and we make note, we write down everything that people turn into us just so that we know who it belongs to and when we got it.
I'm smiling because I can see you going forward, taking over the role of the Harrison County, West Virginia Historical Society, and your basement will be full of all these
exactly.
items that you have no room to display.
Well, one good thing, the Board of Education did give us two storage rooms in the basement of the Board of Education building. So when we get to the point where we're rotating exhibits, we will have some storage space.
When will you start more specific planning on these are the exhibits that we're going to be doing and developing in 2019.
Right. We have monthly meetings. Okay. We meet the fourth Tuesday of every month at the Board of Education building, and everyone's welcome to attend. We start at 5:30. And so each of those meetings, we are developing a more specific plan of when we're going to be open full-time and what exhibits we will have. We plan on having some exhibits that will be permanent, and then we have some exhibits that will be rotating in and out. We do have Wayne Worth, who's doing a video history of Clarksburg, and he will be interviewing different people from around the city about the different, you know, the glass factories and the railroads and the schools. And he's going to put together a video that hopefully we will get to show at the Robinson Grand Theater when we bring in school groups or visitors. And that's going to be one of our stops on the walking tour around the city.
Okay. So, and all of that will draw more attention to what you're doing.
Right.
Clarksburg History Museum on Facebook. And someone's keeping it pretty up to date. You've got an announcement there of your sneak peek.
Yes. Laura Kennedy is our Facebook person.
Okay, doing good.
And
the photo at the top of the Facebook page is a looks like a
B&O Railroad train
coming through a tunnel. It's nicely done. Who did that? It's
very well done. Justin Williams, he's a local artist. He's also done some murals downtown on some of our downtown buildings. And he lives in Clarksburg.
So
he donated his time to get that finished for us.
And I also, they're playing our music, which means we're just about out of time. The picture from the Christmas parade back in the 60s or 70s, I saw it on Facebook last night with young people dressed up as Christmas trees. It was really cute. And there was a note there with it. If you're one of these kids or you can identify one, let us know.
Let us know who you are.
Have you gotten any feedback on that yet?
Not that I know of
They're
yet.
They're cute.
I have to check.
I'm not sure how they walked. It's like full-length Christmas tree costumes.
We've gotten a lot of old pictures. It's really great. It's going to be a great museum.
How are you finding it? You went right back in. You retired from public schools, went right back to teaching at St. Mary's. How are you finding time for it?
I'm at St. Mary's Elementary. It's busy.
Good. And balancing the work you're doing on the museum?
The museum was going to be my retirement project, but now I do it on the evenings and weekends. So it's still working out.
Well, it's a great idea, and I know a lot of people have enjoyed it already. You've had a lot of visitors there.
Over 100 visitors for our military exhibit.
Good deal.
Hope to see everyone Saturday.
Michael Spadafore, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Gary.
An update again as we get into 2019 and kind of want to talk about some of the exhibits you're going to have there. We'll get you back in here. Time for us to take a break right now. When we return, we're going to get an update on what's going on. There's some skiing going on this morning, but it's going to be cold out there. Joe Stevens will join us right after this.
Weekdays from 9, it's the Gary Bowden Show on the AJR News Network.
Well, I would guess that there was some serious snowmaking going on last night and perhaps some serious skiing and all the other activities done in the snow this time of year going on this week. And Joe Stevens is here to tell us about the start of the season, which kicks off usually around Thanksgiving Day. Joe, welcome.
It's already kicked off.
Yeah.
It kicked off Snowshoe Mountain. Good morning, Gary.
Yeah.
thanks for having us on. The ski season started on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving this year on the 23rd when the ropes dropped at 9 o'clock at Snowshoe Mountain Resort, and we've been headed downhill ever since.
The most wonderful time of the year for folks in the ski industry, right?
And for about 5,000 employees across the state of West Virginia, the economic impact of about $250,000 in a four-month period. So it's a good thing for everybody that loves the winter season, one of the four seasons in West Virginia, and it's been a really nice weekend, as in the snow that hit the southern portion of the state and into the Carolinas. I just got off the phone with Tom Wagner at Winter Place. They got about 18 inches of snow over the weekend, which is just setting them up great for an opening for the season this Friday. Talked to the folks at Snowshoe this morning. They got about 4 inches of snow, and they've been open, like I said, since the 23rd. They've got their Western Territory, which is their signature trails. They're open right now, so they're going forward. Canaan got a couple inches. The Canaan Valley area got a couple inches, and right now it looks like Timberline, according to their website, they're opening on the 14th, and Canaan is planning to open the 15th. So we're getting on board up in the Tucker County area. Whitegrass Touring Center has had cross country and snowshoeing already. So winter is here. The calendar might not say it, but we've got snow in the mountains of West Virginia.
Well, and actually the temperatures have been conducive to making snow because we haven't had some of those huge ups and downs in temperature that you have sometimes this time of the year. It's stayed cold enough on most nights to make snow, has it not? Where you're able to make snow.
They're making snow as we speak right now. We've got a temperature of 26 degrees at Winter Place, 26 degrees at Snowshoe. They've got the guns going on the trails that Winter Place will be opening this Friday, and opening more terrain at Snowshoe. I know they're making snow at both Timberline and Canaan. So, yeah, the temperatures over the night have been very favorable for snowmaking conditions, and that's what separates West Virginia from other states, the reliable snowmaking that we have. And where we're located, if you look at the Allegheny Mountains from Tucker County down into Raleigh County, it creates a bowl, and that bowl gets the from west to east precipitation and cold temperatures, and it captures in that Allegheny Mountain bowl, and we can make snow when a lot of other states can't make snow, so that puts us ahead of the game.
We're talking with Joe Stevens, Executive Director of the West Virginia Ski Areas Association. Joe, how big is Christmas for these various resorts?
There's a three-week period coming up, the week before Christmas, Christmas week, and the week after Christmas going into New Year's. And for the resorts in West Virginia, it's not a make-or-break situation, but it makes for a good season. And with the conditions that we're having, we're pushing towards a good season. Reservations are going well for all the resorts, advanced reservations. But when you're looking at that three-week period over the course of the season, which lasts from Thanksgiving to the 1st of April, you're looking at about a 35% of the yearly budget of revenue during that three-week period.
Okay, so pretty significant. What, Joe, what are people doing in the snow these days? The snow's not just for skiing anymore.
Well, they're letting gravity be their friend, Gary. For the most part, we've got skiers, we've got snowboarders, and we've got snow tubers, and everybody has their own way of having fun in the snow at the Nordic areas and also the resorts. They allow some cross country and some snowshoeing going on. And I know at Snowshoe, you can go snowmobiling and that sort of thing.
But, I wanted to ask you.
For the most part, Gary, though, people are still pointing them downhill and having fun on skis and snowboards.
Okay. And what about you? Aside from all the radio, TV interview demands, what keeps you happening or keeps you hopping during this 4 to 5 month period that you described?
Hey, I've got to get out and do some product evaluation. I got to make sure what I'm hearing folks talking about and experiencing. I've got to get out there, and my office on many days is at the Winter Place or Snowshoe or Canaan or Timberline. And like I said, there's a time for product evaluation. Plus, I have a 14-year-old son that is, I caught him sharpening his edges on his skis yesterday. So he's ready to get out there with his friends and have some fun. But it's the time of year where you bundle up, you understand it's going to be cold, you dress for it, you act accordingly.
You've been at this for a while. Your family pretty much grew up with this whole snow ski area business, didn't they?
Well, Christian was born in Elkins in March of 2004, and we were right in the midst of the ski season there. So, yeah, he's seen snow since day one, and it was snowing when we brought him home from the hospital. So he's been out there snow tubing or snowshoeing, or now he's skiing with his ski club from Hurricane High School, and so he's enjoying it. My wife has always enjoyed being out in snow, and, of course, I've since 1985, when I pointed them down the hill for the first time, I've enjoyed it.
I knew that you liked to do it. I guess this time of the year, it might be tough to carve out time for yourself. More carving out time to do what you're doing this morning as opposed to carving the snow. But I know you like to do it. What about development at the resorts, both the resorts and associated retail. Is there still growth potential in the industry in West Virginia, or has it leveled out a little bit?
The growth potential is getting young people into skiing and snowboarding and into having fun. And all the resorts do a good job in beginner lessons and getting out to the young people and using technology to advance the sport. And when I say technology, namely into snowmaking, all the resorts have invested millions of dollars into snowmaking and the technology of snowmaking. It's not what it used to be. I mean, the energy efficient snow guns that are out there now can make more snow quicker and that sort of thing. And it's closer to what Mother Nature. It's not artificial. If you want to have somebody take their fingers across the chalkboard and give me that sound, call it artificial snow in front of me.
Yeah.
And because it's not artificial. Artificial right. snow is something you spray out of a can on your windows.
Yeah.
But it's real man-made snow. But with the technology the way it is now, it's cold water, cold air, and it's the same thing that Mother Nature does. Just we can do it when the temperatures are cold, and we just provide the moisture into it. But another area of the technology that has helped the industry grow is the Internet. And when I say that, I say that because when you and I, we were getting into the sport or enjoying the first sport, you never really knew if the resorts were giving a correct picture of what the conditions are. But now all the resorts here in West Virginia have webcams, and you can go onto those webcams and feel, taste, touch sort of thing and see if the base is what you want it to be, to see if the side-to-side trail coverage is where you want it to be. It's not just slope numbers anymore. You can now go on and get real-time pictures of what you're about to enjoy.
Yeah, that's a good point. But before we have to wrap up, the governor announced a $20 million federal grant to complete Corridor H in Tucker County. What impact is that going to have on folks getting to and from some of these ski resorts? I guess it would primarily impact Canaan Valley.
Well, actually, Corridor H, real quick, Gary, opened up in 1995, around that period in the mid-90s, from I-79 to Elkins.
Right.
And that has already helped Canaan Valley and Snowshoe and Timberline with folks coming from the west, say Ohio or southern Pennsylvania,
right.
that sort of thing. Now, with Corridor H already open, basically from West Virginia into Davis, we're already seeing people coming in larger numbers from the nation's capital and that side of Maryland and in that area, and it's already helped. Now, this section that we're going to be opening with the money that the governor has announced, that's really going to, believe it or not, probably help more with the folks from Charleston, because now they can come up I-79, cut across from Elkins on Corridor H and go all the way to Canaan Valley.
Yeah.
That will help that area. So it's already helping. It's only going to improve it even more.
Boy, that's great. Yeah. And so many retailers, just like the resorts, they make or break during these 4 or 5 months as well, right?
Well, you talk to any gas station along the routes to any of the resorts in West Virginia or any of the small restaurants along the routes to West Virginia resorts and see what they do during the winter. They have to bring in extra staff to handle the folks stopping by and buying their goods there.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, Joe, thanks for taking time. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure chatting with you, and hope you have a great season.
Thanks, Gary. And since, you don't claim Baltimore anymore, my O's will return. They will return. They're coming back. Gary, I appreciate your time. Let gravity be your friend. Hope to see you on the hill.
Thank you, Joe. Joe Stevens is executive director of the West Virginia Ski Areas Association. We have to take a break. Hoppy's on, I think, is out this week. Is that right? Yeah. So we'll have a guest host, and we'll be back to give you a little tip on Metro News Talk Line. First, this final break, and then we'll talk about Metro News Talk Line.
You're listening to The Gary Bouton Show on the AJR News Network.
And as we mentioned, stumbling into that last break, no Hoppy today. Dave Wilson, host of Morgantown's morning talk show. We'll be filling in today. A couple things going on that are important in this area, well, and across the state. The PEIA Task Force has their final meeting today, trying to find a long-term permanent solution to PEIA funding. And then the school board, school building authority, also meets today. Well, they're actually going to make their announcements today of what projects they're going to fund, and this could have a tremendous impact on whether or not the consolidation of Wilsonburg and Adamston Elementary Schools goes through. So it'll be interesting to hear about that later today. You might hear some of that discussion on Dave's show today. I'm not sure. But that's all the time we have for right now. Appreciate you joining us this morning. We'll be back to do it all over again tomorrow. Hope you can join us.